This is Fresh Air Weekend. I'm Dave Davies in for Terry Gross. The Catholic Church is at a turning point in an ongoing conflict between the Vatican and the group that represents 80% of U.S. nuns, the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, known as the LCWR. 4 years ago, the Vatican group responsible for enforcing doctrine, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, began an assessment of the LCWR, motivated by the Vatican's concerns that the group expressed radical feminist views and challenged core Catholic positions on contraception, homosexuality, and the ordination of women to the priesthood. The final assessment was released in April, and it orders the group to conform to the teachings of the Church. Today we'll hear part of Terry's interview with Bishop Leonard Blair of Toledo, the Vatican's delegate for the assessment, who will work directly with the LCWR to carry out these reforms. But first, we're going to listen to an excerpt of Terry's interview with the president of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, Sister Pat Farrell. Last month, Sister Pat met in Rome with officials of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith to discuss the assessment of her group. Fresh Air first aired Terry's interview with Sister Pat on the 17th of July.
Sister Pat Farrell, welcome to Fresh Air, and thank you for so much for being here. Is the fact that you're here on our show, on the radio, a sign that you're ready to speak about the Leadership Conference of Women Religious' decision on how to proceed from here?
You know, we're ready to speak about where we are right now, and that's all we can say.
Where are you right now?
Well, we're in process of gathering the perspective of all of our members. And in August, we will have a National Assembly at which there will be a great deal of open participation by all the members, and we're hoping to come out of that assembly with a much clearer direction about then where the national board and presidency can proceed.
The doctrinal assessment is critical of things that your group has said regarding contraception and gay rights. What positions has your group taken on gay rights and contraception?
You know, I would say really the mandate is more critical of positions we haven't taken.
Meaning you haven't stood against gay rights, you haven't
Right.
stood against contraception.
Right. And as I read that document, the concern is the issues we tend to be more silent about when the bishops are speaking out very clearly about some things.
Right. And I presume that's intentional on your part, that you're not speaking out against contraception or against homosexuality.
Well, there are issues about which we think there's a need for genuine dialogue. And there doesn't seem to be a climate of that in the church right now.
Let me get to another criticism that the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, that their assessment has of your group. And this is policies of corporate dissent. The CDF received letters from leadership teams from your group, protesting the Holy See's actions regarding the question of women's ordination and of a correct pastoral approach to ministry to homosexual persons. The terms of the letter suggest that these sisters collectively take a position not in agreement with the church's teaching on human sexuality. And I was quoting there, and the assessment also criticized your group for placing itself outside the church's teaching. So what's your response to the assessment saying that people in your group have taken a position not in agreement with the church's teaching on human sexuality?
Well, what the document says is that individual congregations or leadership teams may have taken certain positions the Leadership Conference of Women Religious has not. So I think that's an important distinction to make. And I would say that we have been in good faith raising concerns about some of the church's teaching on sexuality, human sexuality. The problem being that the teaching and interpretation of the faith can't remain static and really needs to be reformulated, rethought in light of the world we live in and new questions, new realities as they arise. And if those issues become points of conflict, it's because Women Religious stand in very close proximity to people at the margins, to people with very painful, difficult situations in their lives. That is our gift to the church. Our gift to the church is to be with those who have been made poor, with those on the margins. And questions there are much less black and white because human realities are much less black and white. So that's where we spend our days. And so the questions we bring to the church, the questions that come to us are from the real life situations of real life people.
Do you feel like the church is removed from those real life situations?
I think elements in the church are. And of course, we all, within the church, there are different roles. And a bishop, for instance, can't be on the streets working with the homeless. He has other tasks, but we can be. So if there is a climate of open and adequate and trusting dialogue among us, we can bring together some of those conversations. And that's what I hope we can help develop in a deeper way, the kind of relationships and climate of dialogue that will make it possible for the different perspectives and roles and positions in the church to be in greater interaction and dialogue with one another, really for the good of the whole church.
So I don't mean to put words in your mouth. So correct me if I'm being presumptuous here, but what I think I'm hearing you say is that you think nuns are in a position to actually educate bishops, to educate some of the church hierarchy about what life is like for women today, about what family life is like, what sexual life is like, because you work with women. And that the bishops don't want to listen. They want to tell you what to do.
I think that teaching and listening and discerning together is something that belongs to the whole church. The bishops and the hierarchy have a more specific role as teachers and defenders of the faith, but that can't happen in a vacuum. Nor can our lives with people on the margins happen in a vacuum. We are one church. We are the church. So the dialogue for us is critically important.
So the Congregation for the Defense of the Faith's doctrinal assessment of your group, the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, also questions the group's position on women's ordination. What has your group had to say about women's ordination?
Well, it's interesting because the document quotes the Leadership Conference as having taken a position in favor of women's ordination in 1977. That's a very long time ago. And of course, as women in the church, we have very strongly taken positions about the rightful place of women in society and in the church and the impoverishment of both church and society when the voice and the participation of women are minimized. But the position that we took in favor of women's ordination in 1977 was before there was a Vatican letter saying that there is a definitive church position against the ordination of women. So it's interesting to me that the document goes back some 30 years to talk about our position on the ordination of women. There has, in fact, been an official position by the church that topic should not be discussed. When that declaration came out, the response of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious was to call for a nationwide time of prayer and fasting for all women religious in response to that, because our deep desire for places of leadership for women in the church be open remains a desire. Since then, the Leadership Conference has not spoken publicly about the ordination of women. Imposing a silence, however, doesn't necessarily change people's thinking. But, you know, we are in a position to continue to be very concerned that the role of women in the church be recognized and accepted as equals, and that the church can be rightfully enriched by the gifts that women bring.
So let me get to another criticism of the group in the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith's doctrinal assessment of your group, the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. And it criticizes the group for radical feminism and for, quote, a prevalence of certain radical feminist themes incompatible with the church faith in some of the programs and presentations sponsored by the group, including theological interpretations that risk distorting faith in Jesus and his loving father. Moreover, some commentaries on, quote, patriarchy distort the way in which Jesus has structured sacramental life in the church. What do you hear when you hear the criticism, radical feminist themes? What does that say to you, radical feminist, and how does that compare to how you see the women in your group?
Well, sincerely, what I hear, and phrasing it in that way, is fear. A fear of women's position in the church. Now, that's just my interpretation. That, of course, I have no idea what was in the mind of the Congregation on the Doctrine of the Faith when they wrote that. But women theologians around the world, Catholic women theologians, have been seriously looking at the question of how have the church's interpretations of how we talk about God, about how we interpret Scripture, about how we organize our life in the church, how have those formulations been tainted by a culture, a religious culture, a secular culture, that minimizes the value and the place of women? So, of course, there have been questionings. We've had speakers who've talked about the more feminine dimensions in God. God has no gender. But traditionally, all of our language about God has been in masculine terms. And so I think when, if the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith calls that kind of sincere investigation into our church formulation with a masculine bias, if it calls that radical feminism, I find that a polarizing way of talking about it, which sounds a little fear-based to me. I think that in our day, all of the mainstream religions around the world have been facing the issue of what is women's rightful place in church, in society, in religion, and how have our teachings embodied that? How have churches really passed on a bias against women? Those are very fair and important questions to ask.
The doctrinal assessment by the church looked into your group's stand on issues that relate to women, women's ordination, contraception, abortion, homosexuality is in there too. Radical feminism is the way some views were described by the church hierarchy. And now three bishops have been assigned to oversee your group, the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, and to help revise your group's plans and programs and create new programs for the organization. And it just seems like, well, your group is kind of questioning the role of women in the church and asking for more of a role and to be able to speak more openly about what women are thinking, and the answer is, okay, there are three men from the church hierarchy who are now going to revise your group statutes and review its plans and create new programs and basically try to overhaul the group. So how does that make you feel?
Deeply saddened and angered, and I think that's just offensive. And I think it reflects a serious misunderstanding and misinterpretation of who we are. And I think it reflects the impoverishment of the church that has not held the leadership and the voice of women in a place of equal prominence. I think that's what we're seeing reflected there. And to call that concern radical feminism, I think just reflects the fear of women in the church and the fear of what could happen if women were really listened to and taken seriously.
What is that fear? What do you think they fear could happen?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think that the church has been structured with all male leadership, which I think has serious disadvantages. And the church has been structured with with a hierarchical, unquestioned structure that has little mechanism for accountability. That's so different from our reality within women's congregations because, for one thing, we elect all our own leaderships, and we have forever in the history of women religious life have experienced the leadership of strong women. Women have been leaders in our ministries. We're a very, very educated group of women within the Catholic Church. We have women who are CEOs of hospital systems, who are presidents of colleges, principals of schools. So as women religious, our lifetime experience has been of expecting strong leadership from women. And that's been our daily experience. So our experience of the leadership of women in the church is our daily bread. It's very different from that of the hierarchy.
I think a lot of people inside and outside the church have questioned the strict discipline that your group is getting with the way priests accused of sexual abuse have been treated by the church. And in fact, Cardinal Levada, who was the head of the Conference of the Doctrine of the Faith during the assessment of your group, he just retired. He is one of a group of top Vatican officials named in a sex abuse complaint filed in September of 2011 in the International Criminal Court, charging the church hierarchy tolerated widespread sexual abuse on a global scale. And in at least two instances during his time in Portland, Archbishop Levada chose to return priests with proven allegations of sexual abuse against them to ministry after treatment with the agreement of therapists, according to church records. I read that in the New York Times. So what are your thoughts about how priests accused of sexual abuse were returned to their parishes while the church is cracking down on your group?
Well, it's horrific. I mean, the sexual abuse scandal in the church is deeply painful for all of us and absolutely unacceptable. And I think that the healthiest thing is that it's all coming to light so that it can be dealt with. And I think you're right, the contrast between the severity with which our organization is being treated and the lack of adequate response on the church to the sexual abuse scandal, it's just an unacceptable scenario.
I want to ask you a question that I've asked many women of different faiths, many women religious of different faiths, and that is, why would you want to stay in an institution that doesn't think of women as equal, that doesn't think of you as worthy of being equal?
I have faith that the church can respond and change, but I would answer that in the same way. I would say, why would you stay in a country in which you severely disagree with the leadership of a president? I'm an American, and I am the church. I'm a Catholic. I am the church. So I will continue to work for the rightful place of women in the church, but it's easier said than done to just talk about walking away, because I also feel some responsibility as the church to bring that corrective to the church for the sake of the whole.
You became a nun just about the time of the end of Vatican II, which reformed the church and enabled nuns to not wear habits, to dress in regular clothes, and to take positions in lay organizations and to be more out in the world. Did you expect when you became a nun that things would head in the opposite direction and that views of women would become more conservative?
No, and it's deeply disappointing to me. And I entered religious life at the time when there was huge excitement and hopefulness because the Second Vatican Council developed a different theology of religious life rather than talking of the church as something that viewed the world as something to be distanced from, as what would contaminate us from holiness. Rather, it's a place of encounter with God where we don't need to separate ourselves from, but walk into and to find God present there.
Sister Pat Farrell is the president of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, the LCWR. Her interview with Terry Gross was originally broadcast on Fresh Air on July 17th. A week later, on July 24th, Terry recorded an interview with Bishop Leonard Blair, the Vatican delegate who oversaw the doctrinal assessment of the LCWR. We're going to hear part of that interview now. A quick note to listeners, in order to fit both of these interviews into today's Fresh Air Weekend, they had to be significantly shortened. If you want to hear the interviews as they were originally broadcast, you can find them on our website, freshair.npr.org.
Bishop Leonard Blair, welcome to Fresh Air. In the documentation that you presented for the doctrinal assessment of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, you wrote that the group is silent on the right to life from conception to natural death, a question that is part of the lively public debate about abortion and euthanasia in the United States. Why do you think that this group needs to be emphasizing the church's position on abortion and euthanasia as opposed to remaining silent about it?
Well, I think it is very striking when it's very clear to everyone inside and outside the church that the threats to the dignity and rights of the human person from conception until natural death is so much under attack, and where even popes like Pope John Paul have talked about it as one of the great moral issues of our time, and the church has been so strong in defending that right to life. You know, it seems that one would expect the Leadership Conference of Women Religious to stand up and be counted in upholding this right and working for its defense. And the reality is that there's nothing really said by the Leadership Conference on this issue. They have had statements on things like human trafficking and immigration, which are wonderful things. You know, that those kind of things should be addressed. They've had statements on ecology and climate change, militarization of space, nuclear weapons, but nothing on the issue of abortion and the importance of upholding the right to life.
Can I play you what Sister Pat Farrell had to say on the issue of remaining silent on abortion and euthanasia, on right to life issues?
Yes.
Here's her response to that, as broadcast last week on our show.
I think the criticism of what we're not talking about seems to me, again, unfair, because religious have clearly given our lives to supporting life, to supporting the dignity of human persons. Our works are very much pro-life. We would question, however, any policy that is more pro-fetus than actually pro-life. You know, if the rights of the unborn trump all of the rights of all of those who are already born, that is a distortion too, if there's such an emphasis on that. However, we have sisters who work, all of our congregations have sisters who work in right-to-life issues. We also have many, many ministries that support life, we dedicate our efforts to those on the margins of society, many of whom are considered kind of throwaway people, the cognitively impaired, the chronically mentally ill, the elderly, the incarcerated, to the people on death row. We have strongly spoken out against the death penalty, against war, hunger. All of those are right-to-life issues. And there's so much being said about abortion that is often phrased in such extreme and such polarizing terms that to choose not to enter into a debate that is so widely covered by other sectors of the Catholic Church, and we have been giving voice to other issues that are less covered but are equally as important.
So that was Sister Pat Farrell, president of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, as recorded on our show last week. Bishop Blair, what's your response to what she said?
Well, my response is one of great disappointment, because obviously the human person has to be defended in all aspects, and I think that's what Sister Pat is saying. No one is questioning or criticizing the fact that many sisters are involved in the care of the elderly, the infirm, the needy, the troubled. But I recall something that Pope John Paul II said. He said that all other human rights are false and illusory if the right to life, the most basic and fundamental right and condition of all other personal rights, is not defended with maximum determination. You know, we also hear a lot about the Second Vatican Council. The Second Vatican Council said that life must be protected with the utmost care from the moment of conception. It said abortion and infanticide are abominable crimes. So to kind of relativize or say, well, you know, the right to life of the of an unborn child is a preoccupation with fetuses, or it's relative in its importance, I can't agree with that, and I don't think that represents the Church's teaching and the focus of our energies in trying to deal with this great moral issue.
The doctrinal assessment also criticizes the Leadership Conference of Women Religious by saying that issues of crucial importance to the life of the Church and society, such as the Church's biblical view of family life and human sexuality, are not part of the LCWR agenda in a way that promotes the Church's teachings. What would you like to see the group teaching about human sexuality?
Well, I think another great issue of our society today is the defense of the God-given institution of marriage between one man and one woman. And I think everybody knows this is at the front line of moral issues in our country today. And so what we would imagine happening for a organization of Catholic religious women would be that they would be front and center in speaking on behalf of this fundamental teaching. And yet we don't find that. And this raises another important point, I think, that no one is questioning the compassionate pastoral care that has to be given to people who have a homosexual inclination. And I think sometimes there's a disservice done when it's made to sound as if the Church condemns homosexuals, and that is not the case. The bishops in the United States have written a guide for pastoral care of people with a homosexual inclination. So we want to extend that care to everyone, and we want to treat everyone with dignity and respect. But that's very different than insisting then on the claims of a gay lifestyle or gay culture and trying to undermine the institution of marriage. And that's something where I think Catholics would reasonably expect that a leadership group of women religious would subscribe to that and want to be part of that effort.
But a growing number of people in the United States find gay marriage to be not only a perfectly acceptable thing, but a positive direction to head in, because it gives equality and equality of marriage to homosexuals. It's one of the things where a lot of people think the Church is actually out of step.
Well, you bring up a very important point that, yes, there are a lot of people who don't agree with the Catholic Church about these moral teachings and moral issues. But we would expect that a group of religious sisters who are Catholic nuns would accept the teaching of their Church. And I might add that this is not a teaching that we just dreamt up in recent years. It's been the, from time immemorial, the God-given nature of human sexuality and marriage.
I think some people think that, you know, that the Church is actually being very hypocritical about certain issues like homosexuality and gay marriage, and trying to prevent nuns from questioning any church positions on sexuality, while at the same time, many people think there was so much neglect and cover-up within the Church of the priest sex abuse scandal, with abusive priests sometimes just being moved to a different parish. I want to read you something from the National Catholic Reporter. This is an article by Kathy Gallagher. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, from July 17th of this year. For nearly 8 years, she worked as a psychologist at a treatment center for priests and religious, and she worked with a number of men who had committed sexual abuse. She writes, "The Church has not yet been willing or able to examine its own role as an institution in concealing and enabling decades of abuse. The bishops have not taken collective responsibility for their actions and inactions and for the enormous pain they've caused. As much as the abuse itself, it is this failure by the hierarchy to acknowledge and accept their responsibility that has angered and disillusioned so many current and now former Catholics. The church hierarchy has started a fight with the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. In the doctrinal assessment, they've accused the women of the church of betraying the core values of the church and of not being sufficiently trustworthy to reform themselves. They've ordered the women to be closely supervised. These accusations seem more rightly to belong to the sexual abuse scandal rather than to the actions of the LCWR. It was the bishops who, by protecting the abusers, betrayed core values of the church and caused scandal to the faithful. It is the institutional church that appears not to be able to reform itself and to be in the need of outside supervision. What's your reaction to that? Because I think that expresses the views of a lot of people inside and outside the Catholic Church.
Well, clearly, wouldn't even attempt, nor would I want to defend the indefensible. There's not a day that goes by that I don't pray for the victims of sexual abuse in the church. And I will say this, that I do think the bishops in the last 10 years, at our meeting in Atlanta recently, we received a report from our National Review Board reminding us of things that we were already aware of, for the most part, of the tremendous efforts that we've done and made in order to address this problem. And we've tried to be a real leader in examining the root causes and the condition of people who do this. We've tried to reach out to the victims, and we made major strides in that area. I hesitate to say that we've done all we can, because how can you ever do everything in such a tragic situation? But my point is simply that I think the bishops really have tried very hard and have done a lot of good things to try to remedy the situation, and above all, to prevent it in the future. I think we've done everything humanly possible we can as a body to try to deal with this problem. But let's put it this way. Even Jesus said that scandals will inevitably come, but woe to those to whom they come. I've often thought in terms of the sex abuse scandal, of the mystery of iniquity in the church. I've reflected on the fact that Judas was one of the 12 apostles. We don't think enough about that our Lord actually, within his own 12 apostles, and remember, the bishops are successors of the apostles, the great human weakness and this mystery of iniquity that's at work. Having said that, though, I don't think you or anyone would suggest that because there is this scandal and because there were tremendous failures and we have to live with that and try to make reparation for it, that doesn't mean that the Catholic Church now is somehow going to cease to exist, or that the bishops can no longer exercise their responsibility for being teachers of the faith, for proclaiming the gospel, for celebrating the sacraments, for speaking to the world about Christ. And if we are to continue that mission, well, that includes our responsibility for church teaching, and that's the issue here with the doctrinal assessment.
So to people who think that the church is being a little hypocritical and cracking down on nuns who are expressing either dissenting views or more likely silence on certain issues that you'd like them to be emphasizing, while taking so long to really investigate the sexual abuse scandal. So do you understand why some people think that that's hypocritical?
Yes, I think that the sexual abuse scandal is a great shadow that over the church and over the hierarchy that we have to live with. But we also have to keep going on as a church with integrity. And, you know, you use the phrase cracking down. I think we certainly have cracked down on sexual abuse and made great strides to understand it and to prevent it. I don't know that I would use the word cracking down with regard to the LCWR. All along, the assessment, and even now, is meant to be an effort to work with them, to have them enter into dialogue with us in order to remedy what we feel are serious doctrinal concerns.
I know Sister Pat's feelings were that it is not that she would like to be in dialogue. She would like to be able to question and think and dialogue and talk it through. But what the assessment is asking for isn't dialogue. It's conformity, conform to the teachings. This isn't the time to be dialoguing. It's the time to just say, follow these rules.
Well, I think we have to give a nuance about dialogue, because if by dialogue they mean that the doctrines of the church are negotiable and that the bishops represent one position and the LCWR presents another position and somehow we find a middle ground about basic church teaching on faith and morals, then no, that's, I don't think that's the kind of dialogue that the Holy See would envision. But if it's a dialogue about how to have the LCWR really educate and help the sisters to appreciate and accept church teaching and to implement it in their discussions and try to heal some of the questions or concerns they have about these issues, then that would be the dialogue. I think that the fundamental faith of the Catholic Church is that there are objective truths and there are teachings of the faith that really do come from revelation and that are interpreted authentically through the teaching office of the Church by the guidance of the Holy Spirit, and that are expected to be believed with the obedience of faith. And those are things that are not negotiable. You can have dialogue about understanding these things, but it is faith-seeking understanding. It's not new understandings that then change the faith. And I think that's what really gets to the heart of all that we find in this assessment, that they are promoting unilaterally new understandings, a new kind of theology that is not in accordance with the faith of the Church.
One of the things that the doctrinal assessment criticizes the Leadership Conference of Women Religious for, I'll quote this, issues of crucial importance to the life of church and society, such as the church's biblical view of family life and human sexuality, are not part of the group's agenda in a way that promotes the church's teaching. I assume that means in part that you'd like to the group to be speaking against contraception.
Yes, contraception would certainly be an issue that would figure into that list of things. Now, you understand, though, it doesn't mean that we expect the Leadership Conference of Religious to constantly be having programs devoted to church teaching on contraception, but we certainly would expect that over the years, and particularly since part of the organization's role is to provide enrichment and for theological formation for their members, that this issue would come up in a positive way that explains the church teaching.
On a related note, and I'm not attributing this to the LCWR, but I think the issue of contraception is an issue that has driven many women away from the Catholic Church, and many women within the Catholic Church don't follow the ban on birth control. And I think it's fair to say many women are confounded by the idea that they have to follow the rules set by celibate men who have no idea what it means to be pregnant, who have no idea what it means to know that every sexual encounter with your husband might result in a pregnancy. And that it's very challenging for many women to live with that kind of rule, that every sexual encounter with your husband might result in a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. That would affect every aspect of your life, of your family's life, of your health, of the finances of your family, of your ability to work, just of your ability of other children to maybe go to college, because there wouldn't be enough money if there were 9 children as opposed to 2 children. So on like every level, every sexual encounter has the potential of affecting your future. Now, and just on a practical level, this is why I think many women either leave the church or stay and just don't follow the church on that teaching. So I'm wondering if you think about that and what you think about when you do think about that.
Well, let's begin with a little history. Until 1930, every Christian denomination was unanimous in condemning contraception. And I remember once seeing that in 1930, when the Anglicans did abandon the teaching, they were the first, I think, to do so. It was the Washington Post that editorialized that this would be the death knell of marriage as a holy institution and would lead to indiscriminate immorality and all kinds of problems. Now, 40 years later, in 1968, when Pope Paul VI reaffirmed this received Christian teaching about contraception, He pointed to some of the consequences of separating intercourse from the procreation of children. He said there'd be a gradual weakening of moral discipline, a trivialization of human sexuality, the demeaning of women, marital infidelity often leading to broken families, and state-sponsored programs of population control based on imposed contraception and sterilization. That was in 1968. Now, I think 40 years later, it's pretty clear that all of those things are happening. You know, we live in a world of divorce and broken families, cohabitation, recreational sex, fornication, promiscuity, pornography. And so you have to ask yourself, what are the consequences of this contraceptive morality or contraceptive practice? But let's be clear, the church recognizes that couples can have valid reasons not to have children at certain times in their married life. But what is the method if you have valid reasons not to have children at certain times? People often scoff that the church condemns so-called artificial means but accepts natural family planning. You know, after all, the desired effect is the same, no baby. But
what is natural family planning?
Natural family planning is one which looks to the infertile time that women have, so it requires a certain self-discipline, but it has been shown in its modern form to be actually quite effective and satisfying for married couples to practice natural family planning. And the church tries to promote this very much, but it is treated with a certain indifference and even rejection, you know, or ridicule by many people, but it's a very effective way. The difference between sterilizing an active intercourse yourself and accepting the God-given infertile time is one of great moral dimensions. So it's not entirely true to say that the church simply says that every single act of marriage must result in the procreation of a child.
One of the things that the assessment that you help conduct of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, one of the things the assessment criticizes the group for is its silence on the issue of women's ordination. In other words, the way I understand it, you would like the group to be more vocal in saying that women should not be ordained.
Well, no, we would just like them to have their speakers acknowledge that this is a doctrine of the church.
That women should not be ordained.
Yes.
As the world changes and as women become more equal in the world, should religion change at all as the world around it changes? And for example, I mean, the church has changed on a lot of things. I mean, if you go back to the 12th and 13th century, the office that is now the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith was at that time the office that ran the Inquisition, and people who challenged any of the faith, you know, Catholics who belonged to groups that dissented from some of the teachings, they were held in secret trials, they were punished, they were sometimes tortured. I mean, there's no way the church would do that now. I mean, the church has changed its ways in many things over the years. So is women's position within the church one of the things that maybe at one point it would change?
Well, yes and no. I think certainly the world in which we live today is vastly different than the ancient world or the medieval world or even the world of a century ago. And so there's always an evolution in society. But what are your first principles? What are your basic beliefs? What do you believe is something that's revealed by God in Scripture and tradition and taught authoritatively through the ages? Those kind of things do not change. Their understanding can evolve. There can be aspects of it that evolve and change, but not the fundamental things. And so when it comes to the role of women in the church and in the world, yes, this is a major question today. And it's one that's going to continue to be addressed. But it has to be addressed on the basis of the faith. You know, if one comes to it with the approach that unless women are ordained priests, they are somehow subservient, or that this is a male dominated patriarchy that is corrupt and has no credibility with the gospel. Well, if that's the approach, that's not going to be compatible with Catholicism. And there may be many people in these great upheavals who dissent one way or another about things. There always have been about doctrinal matters through the centuries. But ultimately, I do believe under the work of the Holy Spirit that the faith of the Church continues.
Bishop Leonard Blair of Ohio. He conducted the Vatican's doctrinal assessment of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious and is now charged with helping bring the group into compliance with the Church's teachings. This interview was originally broadcast on Fresh Air on July 25th and was significantly shortened for this episode of Fresh Air Weekend. You'll find this interview as it was originally aired on our website, freshair.npr.org. Fresh Air Weekend was produced by John Myers. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Roberta Shorrock, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, John Sheehan, Heidi Simon, and Yo-Wei Shaw. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Our associate producer for online media is Melody Kramer. For Terry Gross, I'm Dave Davies.